Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Oh, let's get this going, you guys. Just thought it was long overdue to do a live show. And tonight seemed like the night. You know, we are one full week now into free agency. We are definitely into whichever phase or tier you want to call it, you know, second, third, fourth. The big contracts, for the most part, seem to be gone. I mean, Chase Young got $13 million guaranteed for 1 year this year from the New Orleans Saints, which, by the way, as I tweeted today, if you ever wondered whether or not the cap was a real thing or a mirage, nobody mismanages the cap more so than the New Orleans Saints, who every year go into free agency tens of millions of dollars over the cap, have to restructure a bunch of contracts, cut a bunch of guys, and yet they're able to go out and do a one-year, $13 million guaranteed deal with a second-tier player. Crazy to say about someone who was the number two pick overall just a few years ago, right? But that's how they choose to do it. So I don't really have a lot of format tonight. I just kind of wanted to go live. A bunch of you have been asking for it, and there's just a lot to talk about. So I will have comments going that I can see through the YouTube page. There's a little bit of a delay between the software that I use to go live and stream on, and then there's a little bit of latency between that and YouTube. And so if I don't get to your question right away, what I thought I would do today, though, is just kind of recap some of my overall thoughts on free agency, where it starts today, some of what appear to be the philosophical approaches to how John Schneider is going about this offseason, and then take your questions and your comments if you have them, and then do a, you know, it is Mock Draft Monday, and I discovered a new mock draft simulator today, two actually in the last 24 hours. I'll talk about them both. And so I thought we would do a live mock draft and kind of see, you know, now that we know sort of which positions have been filled and which boxes have been checked on the wish list. And as John Schneider seems to do every year, just which he hedges, right? He uses free agency not necessarily to go for dynamic upside and to import stars like a lot of teams do, but to fill holes and set himself up so that he can let the draft come to him. And that gives me an opportunity to show you this. I don't think it's going to take up the whole screen, but I had this prepared recently. For those of you who, because I get it, fans, especially this time a week ago, fans, a lot of fans were freaking out because at this precise time a week ago, the Seahawks had brought back two of their own. They'd signed Noah Fant to a two-year, $21 million deal, and they had taken care of their biggest priority in the offseason, bringing back Leonard Williams. It was a priority because he's an outstanding player, top 10 in his position, a guy that John Schneider has wanted, been outspoken about for a couple of years, but also because of the compensation. They traded a second-round pick to rent him for half of the season last year and didn't want it to end up being a rental long-term. And then there wasn't any news for the next 24 hours or so. We live in an era where we have access to everything, and we also have all these fun tools at our disposal. We have mock draft simulators. We have all 22 tape. We have most, not all, most of the tools available to us today to sit at home and go through some of the scouting motions. Those of us who are, look, there are fans who only care about their team essentially from September until January and hopefully into February. They couldn't care less about what happens during the offseason, or they just pay a cursory attention to what's happening in the offseason. They only read headlines. They want buzz. They want big splashy headlines. So they have access to that, so everybody can watch these players. And then there's another level of that where you have all these amazing assets of people who, a lot of them are former players, former scouts, or just people who have a passion for football and like to do breakdowns and flex scouting muscles and do these things on YouTube that we can watch. You know, JT O'Sullivan, former backup quarterback for a long time in the NFL, kind of a journeyman, but a guy who played the position, has an amazing channel, the Quarterback School, where he focuses only on quarterbacks, but he does these incredible breakdowns in such a way that it educates the viewer. So if you want to find out about this year's draft class, or you want to find out about Sam Howell, you know, he's got a bunch of his games from last year, and I recommend you do that, especially if you're someone who doesn't like the trade or just doesn't think they like Sam Howell, because you look at a stat sheet and you see 21 picks and you think he must not be good. To which I would say, go look at the first couple of seasons for the best quarterbacks you can imagine over the last 10 to 20 years. A lot of picks. But also go watch some of that stuff on JT O'Sullivan's page. And there are others, you know. Plus, on top of that, we all most likely, if we're football fans, we play fantasy football, right? And so we have this fantasy football mentality, it seems like. And so we want the star players. We want splashy signings. We see other teams do it. And then we run to social media and we brag about the player we just signed. But let me show you this chart. This is the relationship between free agent spending and win-loss record in the last 12 years. So it goes on the bottom, it goes left to right, most number of total wins over that span. And then low to high, it goes free agent spending. And so look at the Jacksonville Jaguars all the way up there in the top left quadrant. And that whole quadrant is a bad place to be. It means you spend a bunch of money in free agency, but it doesn't equate to wins. interesting that right there near the center of it is the San Francisco 49ers. Now, obviously, the beginning of this time period, 2012 to now, they were really, really bad, but they still spent in free agency. Obviously, now they're good. But look at the Jaguars. By far have spent the most money in free agency over the last 12 years and have the lowest number of wins. Then you look at the other extreme example, and look where the Seahawks are. Right? They're up there, lower right quadrant, lowest number of free agent spending, among the lowest, about $500 million over that 12-year period. But it's hard to pinpoint here. 105, 106 wins. You see the Patriots all the way over there, all those Super Bowl championships over that span, and yet they were very frugal in free agency. Now you can debate what comes first, chicken or the egg, right? That it's not because you spend money in free agency that you lose games. That's not the direct correlation. It's that typically the teams that have the most money to spend, the highest cap space every year, aren't good. And it's one of the reasons they're not good. They don't have a franchise quarterback. They don't have high-paid players. You know, you look at this year, who had the most cap space? Washington Commanders, the New England Patriots, Chicago Bears, Carolina Panthers. Whereas the good teams have good players. It's all about how you draft and develop players. And the teams that do that the most don't need to go out and make splashy free agent signings. Also, when you sign a free agent, by very definition, in most cases, you have to overpay. Right? Is Robert Hunt worth $100 million over 5 years? In a vacuum, no. But when there's competition and when teams realize that, whereas it used to be that, you know, left tackle was the biggest priority, now defensive schemes have evolved to the point that like interior pressure can be more disruptive than outside pressure. And so, and running the football between the tackles is more important than ever so that you can do play action off of it. There's a whole philosophical kind of road we can go down. And so the value of guards in many teams' eyes has gone up. It's about paying more than the other team if you want that player. Competition matters, right? John Schneider talked about it this week on his show. For those of you who think, you know, swapping a third round pick for a fourth and a fifth for a sixth, moving down in the draft at two spots to get Sam Howell wasn't a smart idea. Bottom line is that John Schneider likes Sam Howell quite a bit, has since his draft year. Thinks at $1 million a year, he is an outstanding option as a backup quarterback, better than anything they can get on the free agent market for less money, but also that he has a chance to be a long-term solution potentially as a starting quarterback. There was competition. There were other teams in the mix. Some of that's mind games, of course. Some of that is gamesmanship. But Schneider has enough good relationships in this league that I think he understands when he can believe people and when he's, you know, when he's being taken. So that's kind of what happens with free agency. And so what we're seeing, I think I saw an interesting point just before I went live today, that from what we've seen from John Schneider and the way that he has approached free agency so far, those questions that we had going into the offseason about, hey, is John going to do things differently this year because Pete Carroll's not around as executive vice president of football operations, final say on roster decisions, we weren't sure. But he's doing things exactly the same way that he always has. Brings back players that he thinks are a priority and then goes out and tries to find value, solid players in free agency, and then tries to find kind of some unpolished gems. Guys that haven't had an opportunity yet, but who they have on film. The thing that I think some fans lose sight of, because so much focus is on the draft, and we know how scouting works, and we know how they build their boards, and they build evaluations, and we hear all those terms and buzzwords, and we get behind the scenes looks at how the draft process works, because there's podcasts out there and there's behind the scenes kind of all access videos and things that teams are doing now. But they take the same approach to free agency. When you hear titles, director of pro player personnel, and you hear about draft boards, they have the same things when it comes to free agency. You know, John will talk about the boards in his office and in their war room and everything, all these whiteboards. They have a board for free agency and they grade just like they would for the draft. And this is one of the reasons they do such deep draft work on prospects that they might necessarily not have a shot at in the draft, either because they don't draft high enough or because, you know, this year's a great example. There's going to be a whole bunch of prospects that are graded as second round picks. Seahawks don't have a second round pick, might not get one. So why would they do work on a bunch of guys that are expected to go in the second round? Because you never know if a guy's going to fall. A, you never know what trades might be able to come your way during the draft. B, but also 4 years from now, when those guys finish their rookie contracts and become free agents, you've done the evaluations. It goes into that. They grade these guys. And so when they sign a player today, and I have to look this player's name up again because I'd never heard of him before today. Tremaine Antrim Jr., 25-year-old guard, 6'2", 314 pounds, played at Clemson, played some tackle and guard at Clemson, won a national title. Seventh round draft pick of the Rams 4 years ago. Looked to be an ascending player. Started week two, 2022, against the Falcons, and then hurt his ankle and missed the rest of the year. Guy that literally I'd never heard of. But then you watch the tape, and with NFL Plus now, I have, you know, all 22, and I did some research and found out when he got the most snaps, looked at his preseason game from this year when he got 63% of the snaps, played right guard, and then watched the beginning of his start last year before he got hurt, saw some really, really good stuff. This guy looks like a starting guard in the NFL. Well, I'd never heard of him, but their staff had done the work. It's not that the end of the season comes around and they go, all right, what are we going to do now? Let's start combing through rosters. What about this guy? What about? They've already done that work. And so, but John Schneider and the Seahawks have a different philosophy than other teams. And you can call this what you want. John Gilbert of Field Goals wrote about it 2 years ago. Go back on my Twitter timeline a couple of days ago and you'll see the story that I pinned there. A lot of organizations take the approach to roster building of studs and duds. You sign as many big-time free agents or re-sign your own guys to big contracts as much as you can. So you sign stars, you pay stars, and you fill out the rest of the roster with cheap draft picks and undrafted free agents. The Seahawks pay the middle class more than probably any other team. And John does a great job of breaking it down year by year over about a 5 or 6 year period to show total allocation of salary cap that's paid to veterans on their second contract in most cases. This year is no different. Jerome Baker is a great example of that. Finished his rookie contract. Good, solid player. Really good player. Dolphins tried to re-sign him. They had to cut him because of salary cap space. Tried to re-sign him. Couldn't come to terms. He wanted to test the market. Seahawks signed him. And they like doing these one-year deals so they don't strap themselves 2, 3, 4 years down the line like the aforementioned New Orleans Saints or the Dallas Cowboys for years were known for doing that. The Rams have done it for a long time. But what that does is it puts more stress on your current salary cap. And so they prefer to do that because it gives you more, it solidifies your roster. It raises your floor, I guess, is the argument. Now, you could argue against that, that it kind of hamstrings them too, or that, you know, you may have the opinion that it's better to sign a $10 or $12 million player than $3, $4 million players and then take your chances in the draft or undrafted free agency or pick through the bargain basement in July right before camp opens when guys haven't signed. It's an organizational philosophy thing. He's going about it the exact same way. And so as we get towards, we're going to do a mock draft in a little bit. He's doing it again. He's checking boxes. You look position group by position group by position group, right? Defensive line, better off than it was a year ago when they flushed the entire unit out. And by this time a year ago, all they had signed was Jaren Reed and Draymond Jones. That was it. We were panicking about the defensive line. Remember that? Then they got Mario Edwards late in the offseason. Then they drafted Cameron Young and Mike Morris, right? Traded for Leonard Williams at the deadline. This year, the defensive line's in much better shape than it was a year ago because you have Jaren Reed still and Draymond Jones, who presumably, we hope, will perform better, be used better, be coached up better, be put in a position to succeed in year two. We have Leonard Williams back for a full season, one of the top defensive linemen in the league. We have Cameron Young, who's got a year under his belt now. Mike Morris, who missed all last year from injury, coming back. Miles Adams again, just 25 years old still. So we're kind of hit the ground running there this year, and they certainly would look to add to it during the draft. The edge group brought back the entire group intact, even Darrell Taylor. Cornerback group brought the entire group back intact. You know, brought back Michael Jackson and even Artie Burns, so that whole group is back. Safety, cut Diggs and Adams, but kept Julian Love, and then went out and signed Rayshon Jenkins, a really solid veteran. And in each of those positions, they have some young guys that are interesting as well. Linebacker, everybody was freaking out about because Bobby walked. Jordan Brooks got away. We're not sure. We may never know if they really wanted Brooks back. But they go out and sign two really interesting veteran players who are still young in their prime. Jerome Baker just turned 27. Terrell Dotson's 25. Highest rated linebacker via PFF last year in the 10 games he started, first time to be a starter, so an ascending player. And then Jerome Baker, who's just a really, really solid, good player at the other linebacker spot. So you try to argue with me that today the roster on defense is worse than it was a year ago at this time, I'll fight you on that. Then on offense, the entire wide receiver group, one of the strengths of the roster, is back. The entire running back room, except for DJ Dallas, who I consider a replacement level player, back. Tight end, you lost Parkinson and Disley, but you replaced Disley with Farrell Brown, who I think is a very comparable player, outstanding blocker. And you bring back Fant, again, presumably to be featured more. You bring back Geno Smith. Like the continuity's there. So the offensive line worries us. We're going to talk about that a lot when it comes to the draft. And I did a show today. I'll put a link in the description if you haven't watched it yet, with Sanjit T, where that's what we focus on. We break down the entire offensive line, some of the unknown guys that you might not have heard of, like McClendon Curtis, who have a chance. And then, the guy that was signed today, talk about the prospect of Lucas maybe moving inside to guard. You know, how much does George Fant have left in the tank? You know, what does he think we can expect from Charles Cross in his third year, coming off an injury riddled second year? So for all of the freaking out that's been done over the last 7 days about the roster, with the exception of one or two positions on the offensive line, I think it's a better roster. I do. All right, let's get some questions and comments. Let's see what we have here. I'd rather be flying an X-Wing. That's a great name. Hey, Dan, you've done a great job with the amount of homework ever since I started watching beginning last season. Keep up the great work. I appreciate that. In general, I get a good feeling about how this team's getting put together. Realistically, I think we might be a wild card this year, but hopefully more in year two and three of McDonald. Your thoughts? I think that's an important question because as we get closer to the season, I think we're gonna spend a lot of time talking about expectations. And I have no idea. You know, one thing that I usually look forward to, or have for the last 10 plus years, is when the schedule's released in shortly after the draft, right? Is we go through and we do the thing where we try to predict record based on every single game and what we know about both those teams. How am I going to do that? I just might not even do it this year because we don't know. We don't know. It might take a year for the staff to figure out how to work together. And I think it's going to be, I told someone yesterday, I think this season's going to resemble 2010 a lot more than it resembles 2012. You remember they made like 250 plus transactions that year. It's not going to be as bad as that. But, you know, news came out today that the Seahawks are kicking the tires on Randy Gregory. And on its face, that might not make sense. But I think they're just kicking the tires on everything. They're going to turn over every figurative rock that they can find to just throw as many resources and tools and sometimes toys to Mike McDonald, Ryan Grubb, and the rest of that staff and see what works. It took Mike McDonald a little bit of time to tighten up that Ravens defense. And it wasn't until they got Roquan Smith that it really came together. Maybe a similar situation. You know, you get through this year, you find out what works and what doesn't. Next year, you'll be much, much more clear about, okay, we need a three technique. Or we need a Mike. Or maybe we need another shutdown corner or a bigger box safety, whatever it is. Same thing on offense. You know, and I know I'm already getting some questions about the offensive line. And of course, that's going to come into play with quarterback. And I think that's where they're at with quarterback. You have a very good middle of the league quarterback making middle of the league money. It matches up almost perfectly. That's a really good foundation to have going into a new era. Kind of similar to the Tavares Jackson situation early in Pete Carroll's regime. And then, you know, Ryan Grubb's in the system for a year, see what he can do. And you evaluate everything up close over the course of a 17 game season. And then next year, okay, how's the roster stand? How do we feel about the quarterback position? Sam Howell got a chance. If not, now we can be aggressive. And they'll have more tools to be aggressive with next year with extra picks. Noah Berman, I'm okay with what we've done except for John basically refusing to pay our O linemen. The market and times are changing. We need to build the trenches and can't keep going cheap on the line. Now, this is something that's been talked about a lot. It's a big subject right now. It's the, you know, I kind of titled my video today on it. I don't believe they're going cheap on offensive line with a purpose. I don't think that was the intention. When they drafted Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas 2 years ago, especially after they had the great rookie year, they knew, okay, we're going to want to keep those guys. Those guys are going to be expensive. The Seahawks have paid offensive line. When they went to the Super Bowl, they had a very expensive offensive line. They've paid offensive linemen. It just worked out that way this year. It just kind of came together that way. I think when Schneider said on his radio show last week that guards tend to get overdrafted and overpaid, he had a little bit of a tone. I think he was a little bit upset. I think he wanted to bring Damian Lewis back. And it just got away from him price-wise. I think he would have liked to then pivot and maybe sign one of the other guards on the market. And it was just too expensive because they had other things they wanted to do. Other teams will react differently to that. They'll just decide we have to have a starting left guard. So let's go pay that, even though it's more than we want to. And we'll just have to sacrifice. We'll have to wait on corner or we'll have to wait on defensive end and we'll figure that out later. It also could be a case, and the staff's been in place now for a month. There could be guys on the roster that they feel better about than we know. They could love McClendon Curtis. They carried him on the roster the entire year last year because they wanted to protect him after poaching him off the Raiders practice squad. You know, that's just one example. I think they feel really good about Olu Oluwatimi, and fans have kind of forgotten about him. And so they think we need a center. We need to draft Jackson Powers Johnson because he's the best center in the draft, and we need that. I think I talked about it on the show today. I think Olu Oluwatimi is a 10-year starter in the NFL. So sometimes some of the answers are in places that we're not looking or we're not willing to admit. That being said, after sitting a full year behind Geno, do you think Sam Howell might be a viable long-term starter? Does he have high enough ceiling? Absolutely. I think he could be. I think the Baker Mayfield comps are really savvy. And if you go watch JT O'Sullivan's The Quarterback School, he breaks down a number of full games from Sam Howell last year. The thing I love about JT is he's unbiased. He talks about what he likes and he talks about what he doesn't. And Sam Howell has a lot to work with. I really do. And for those of you who think he's not good, I would ask why? Because he threw 21 picks. Go look at Peyton Manning's first 4 or 5 years in the league. Go look at John Elway's first 4 or 5 years in the league. Andrew Luck. I mean, you name it. Josh Allen, for God's sake. Have you seen the graphic of what Sam Howell's first 18 games as a starter in the NFL look like versus Josh Allen? It's better. Playing quarterback in the NFL is really, really hard. There's a reason that high draft picks don't make it. It's freaking hard. And usually those players go to bad teams. They can't find quarterbacks for a reason because they don't have a support system around them. Sam Howell has some of that it factor that Schneider looks for, that tilt the room factor. Plays his ass off. His first 2 years at North Carolina, he was being talked about as a potential first-round pick. He was an outstanding player. Then he lost Javonte Williams and Michael Carter out of his backfield, and he lost a couple of his top receivers. And so going into his junior year, what did he do? He didn't have that around him, and he had some losses on the offensive line also. He ran for almost 1,000 yards. You talk about how many sacks he took last year and how many picks he threw. Took 65 sacks and got hit a bunch more times. But you know what you see? You know what you don't see? You don't see it changing his play style. You don't see him getting happy feet. You don't see him getting jittery or bailing out of the pocket. You see him standing in the pocket and getting drilled and throwing dimes. I think Sam Howell's got a chance. And you know what? Even if he doesn't make it, the cost of quarterbacks these days and how hard it is to find them, moving down from the third to the fourth and from the fifth to the sixth, picks that I think they're going to recoup by trading down later, to potentially get a franchise quarterback is pennies on the dollar in acquisition cost. I think it's a no-brainer move, and if it doesn't work out, fine. They're going to draft a guy next year anyway, unless they see from Sam Howell this year in the preseason and practices that, oh, geez, this is the dude. Then I think next year they're really, really hunting for that guy in the draft. Boy, the questions are coming in now because the delay has, we've gotten past the delay. Let me see. What's your record prediction at this point from Man of Scrooge? I have no idea. I don't think I'll be able to predict a record until I see some preseason, to be honest. There's just no way of knowing. Don't know the schemes. Don't know how they're going to call games. No idea. The people that say, and they're mostly opposing fans, but not all. I've had some Seahawks fans say, you know, they're only going to win 4 or 5 games this year. Really? I just spelled out what their defense is going to look like. And I think everybody agreed last year. Well, not everybody agreed, but the narrative last year seemed to be the talents there to be better on defense, or the coaching is what's letting us down. I think the talent's better right now on defense overall. And you just hired a guy that's been called the Sean McVay of defense. Let's see what he can do. I also think Ryan Grubb has, you know, I love Schneider's description of him, that he has a big brain. I just think he's really smart. And I think he's going to succeed. Zach says 9+ wins this year. Could be. Could be. If everything comes together, right? Noah Berman says my expectations are we could be 4-13, 11-6, or anywhere in between. I'll go with that too. I have the same prediction. This is interesting. Tali Bahi. I still don't trust Reek Woolen on the other side, Trey Brown or Jackson. I'll say this. I loved that they brought Mike Jackson back because I think that I think Mike McDonald might love him because of his physicality. He's a better athlete than you think, and he's just more willing to do the dirty work than Reek Woolen is. And I think when you talk about how they might be able to recoup picks on days 2 and 3, if you're worried about that, or if they're not able to trade down, I think one of the reasons they might have brought Artie Burns back in addition to Mike Jackson, I think Reek Woolen could be tradable during the draft. He's got all that upside, so you can see a team really, really getting enamored with him. Now, it's a deep cornerback draft, so maybe that mitigates his market a little bit. But I think that could be a possibility. Same as with Daryl Taylor. You know, they instead of tendering him, they offered him a new deal. So he makes a little bit more money than the tender would have been, but only like $20,000 of it is guaranteed. And so I thought of that today when, you know, the report came out about Randy Gregory, that like this edge class is, there's some intriguing guys at the top and then it drops off a cliff. So if a team's looking for some pass rush help and some edge and a guy with some upside and wants to give the Seahawks a 4th round pick, I think they might do that. Do you think McDonald wants to see what he's got for the next year, filling those pieces, but they can still make the playoffs this year? I can't wait to see him play. Go Hawks. Yeah, I think that's the plan. I think this is, they're never going to admit, they're never going to use the word rebuild or step back or reset or any of those other buzzwords. But that is the process. You don't know. You just don't know. King Zoa says Sam Howell is by far the best QB we could have gotten for needing a QB. I think that there are guys at the top of the draft that John Schneider would love to have. It's why they met with him, some of them at the combine. But John has as many contacts and he's tied in with what's going on around the league and guys that he trusts. And I think he came to the understanding that A, they don't have the ammo to move up to get one of the top four guys. B, the top four guys were going to go at the top, probably in the top 6 picks. And see that he didn't see taking, you know, the other two, Nix and Penix, at 16 or in the 1st round. I think that's obvious. I don't think there's any way now after trading for Howell that they also take a quarterback in the 1st round, much to the dismay of some people that really want Michael Penix in Seattle. Think Q comes back for safety. Quandre Diggs, nope. Not after signing Rayshon Jenkins to a 2-year deal. That ship has sailed. I like Kobe Bryant too. I think he showed some things after they moved him to safety last year. And Jonathan Sutherland as well, a guy that was getting first team reps as an undrafted free agent at the end of camp last year, and then he got hurt. So they have some sneaky, interesting depth there. I think they'll draft a guy too. Zach says Lewis got overpaid. Damian Lewis. Let's talk about that concept for a minute of overpaid. A player is worth what a team is willing to pay him. Not what you think a player is worth. I've been telling people for months, Damian Lewis is going to get paid. A 4-year starter, full-time starter who's durable, has played both sides, is good, is going to get paid. I think Damian Lewis is better than Robert Hunt. Robert Hunt had one breakthrough year. Lewis was really steady for 4 years. If you think Damian Lewis isn't a good player, fine. But there was a market for his services, and he got paid about what I think he was worth. Let's see, more Howell stuff. Everybody wants to talk about quarterbacks all the time. Let's see. More Howell. Everybody wants to talk about quarterback. yeah, let's get into this. Let's get into the mock draft, because that's all anyone wants to talk about right now, Sam Howell. So let me go over here. And so I have, if you know me, if you've been following me long, you know that I am a mock draft addict. Sometimes to a fault. And there are a bunch of different mock draft simulators out there. It's funny because the very first one I remember using about 10 years ago was called firstpick.com. It was very archaic, but it worked. And then, Draft Tech came along. The Ultimate GM came along. Then the guys at the Draft Network had one, but then that that company kind of fell apart. So the two big ones the last couple of years have been Pro Football Network and Pro Football Focus. They each have their strengths and weaknesses. Pro Football Network, I like their interface better, and their big board, typically seen Pro Football Focus, their big board always seems to be top heavy. Like, they always have all the best players going in the first two rounds, kind of, no matter what, if that makes sense. And that's not always the way it works. Pro Football Network kind of aired the other way, where continually the way that they grade players, you'd have guys available in the sixth, seventh round that there's no way they're going to get there. It's happening this year. Good example is Dominic Hampton, the safety out of the University of Washington. Productive player, big, long safety, had an amazing combine. You can get him in the seventh round all day long on Pro Football Network. That's not going to happen. And then when it comes to trading, though, I tend to prefer PFF because you can force any trade. What I don't like about either of them is they don't offer trades that are realistic. Pro Football Network will offer you trades and people will take them all the time and they'll go, see what I did? And you'll go, no way you're going to get those picks. Because they don't follow any of the reasonable trade value charts. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, teams have used charts for a long time. And they try to sort of create a consensus of what is fair in trades. Obviously, there's give and take. Again, a trade is worth what a team's willing to pay you for a trade. And there's obviously luxury tax attached to quarterbacks and other premium positions. But Jimmy Johnson was the first one to create this chart, and then a bunch of teams started using him. And then Rich Hill came along a couple of years ago, well, about 10 years ago now, and basically started to add, and you can find other charts now similar to this in, on other sites, where they basically take it and apply some analytic dust to it, where they actually take data from the last 10 years or so of actual trades that have been made and try to figure out a value of each pick in the draft. So, for example, if the first pick is worth 1,000 points and the 15th pick is worth 500 points, and you want to trade up from 15 to 1, you have to offer 500 points in value, which might be a second and a future first. And, you know, I tend to prefer the Rich Hill one because it is based on empirical data compiled over the last 10 years or so. But PFN and PFF, neither of them use those charts. So you have to do it yourself. And I think I finally found, somebody came to me yesterday and said, try NFL Draft Buzz because they do use the trade charts. So I tried it. Shout out to the guys at NFL Draft Buzz. They have some cool things going on over there, but they still have some work to do. The interface is a little clunky. And it did give you the choice. Do you want to use the Jimmy Johnson trade chart or the Rich Hill trade chart? I said, awesome. Rich Hill. The first trade I was offered wasn't realistic, wasn't based on the chart at all. At all. I was offered, you know, somebody wanted to move up 15 spots and they were offering me sixth and seventh round draft choices. And that's not how it works. And then I think because of some of that tweeting, I got a DM today from the guys over at Walk the Mock. First of all, they invited me to do a live mock draft on the 30th at the end of this month and be the Seahawks GM. So look out for that. That'll be fun. But then I got into their simulator. So let's screen share this. I want to show it to you because what I like about it, first of all, I kind of like the interface, right? They kind of do this ESPN kind of television format to it. So over on the left side, you see players that are available. On the right side, you see picks as they're taken. In the middle, it shows your draft needs. And in each player profile, what's cool about this is that, here, let me blow it up bigger so you can see it. Take myself out of it further. You see this little red dot down here under Caleb Williams? If I click on that, it brings up his mock draftable profile. That was a bad example because he didn't test. He didn't do any testing. None of these top guys do anymore. Let's look at Joe Alt. It shows you his broad jump, his height, his weight, his wingspan. I think this is called a spider web. And so the wider this net is, the colored part, the more complete their skill set is, hand size, arm length, wingspan, vertical jump, 40-yard dash, right? Or you can see, guys, let's find an example of a guy that's more limited. Maybe a guy like Nate Wiggins. See, hand size, arm length, short arms, short wingspan, really light and skinny if you watch him run at the combine. But look at that 40-yard dash, 98th percentile, right? Broad jump, height, tall, skinny corner. So that's kind of cool. And then the other thing is that when it comes to making trades, I can basically make any trade I want to. And so I can access the trade chart. And for the sake of this one, just because I want to keep it simple, I'm going to go back to sort of a go-to, just to give you an example of what it might look like if the Seahawks move down 8, 9, 10 spots, pick up a second-round pick. The Green Bay Packers are a logical trade partner in this draft. Not just because they have a bunch of extra picks, but because they are a playoff team that is on the verge of being really good. They made some shrewd free agent signings again this offseason, but they also had the youngest roster in the league last year. And I think that they're looking to make that next step. And so rather than add 11 more drafted rookies to their roster and add a bunch of young volume, I think they're going to be hunting dynamic upside and hunting impact and blue chip players. So they're going to be willing to trade some of those draft assets to move up. There's an opportunity, too, at the end of the third round, where the Seahawks only have one pick on day two now. The Packers have two picks, I think, grouped together in the next 10 that follow that one. So there's an opportunity in the third, too. But there's a trade that I've used a number of times that matches perfectly on the trade chart, where the Seahawks basically go from 16 to 25 and then pick swap in the third. But that doesn't work anymore because they give up the pick for the Howell trade. So we're going to do this. I'm going to start the draft, first of all, and skip to my pick. And you can see the picks coming off the board. So we get down to 16. Let's look at some of the players that are left available. Okay. We're not going to look corner. Okay. There's some interesting offensive linemen, some edge players, bunch of receivers and corners, a lot of offensive tackles. And you get a little farther down, there's some defensive linemen. But I want to make that trade down, right? So I'm going to view trade partners. I'm going to go to Green Bay. I'm going to offer them 116. I'm going to take 125, and then they have 2 second-round picks. The ninth pick in the second round, as much as y'all might want that, it wouldn't match up. And see how it does the math here for us? So if we go the 26th pick in the second round, it's almost an exact match. Look at that. I think they're using the Jimmy Johnson trade chart. 1,000 for the 16th pick in the first round. 1,040 coming back. I like it. I'm going to take that. So that's going to drop us down. I'm going to go skip to my pick. We're going to drop down to 25. Now I've done a bunch of these, right? And I know quite a few of you would like to go defensive line here. Byron Murphy's been a popular choice. Johnny Newton's been a popular choice. But I think, based on a lot of what we just talked about, is I want to go offensive line, right? And these big boards might or might not be realistic. And we're going to take some of that into account because look at this right here on the left-hand side. Troy Faletonu, who played for Scott Huff at UW, played left tackle for the Huskies, but has been projected at left guard because they didn't think he was long enough. And then he goes to the combine. He measures 34.5-inch arms, but he's only, you know, he's listed at 6'4 here. But some people think he's closer to 6'3". I don't think those are the combine measurables. But look at his mock draftable. Look at the athleticism. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah, or maybe it was Charles Davis at the combine, said he tested like a tight end. Right? 93rd percentile for his broad jump, 91% in the vertical jump, and he looked great in the on-field drills. Maybe he slips to here because teams think that he is a little bit of an in-betweener and they don't know what to do with him. And it's such a great tackle class that some of those obvious guys might go. So I was going to say, let's pass on him here because I don't think he makes it to 25, but let's just play the simulator as it is. Okay. Cause we're going to take Troy Faletonu. I think a player like that, you can step in, be plug and play day one and be a starter for you and just maul guys and be athletic. You'd feel a lot better about that offensive line, wouldn't you? And then Oluwatimi next to him. And then at right guard, you leave that open for competition. the kid they signed today, where I still haven't memorized his name. McClendon Curtis is going to be in the mix there. Abe Lucas, there's been some talk. Rob Staten did a video yesterday about how he could see him moving inside. Maybe he's in the mix, but he might not be healthy. So that gives us, right now I'm walking away from this draft and I'm like, it's a success. It's a successful draft because we just drafted a guy to play left guard from day one with Pro Bowl upside, all pro upside. And you know what? If some of these other guys pop and Charles Cross gets hurt, guess what? You kick him out to left tackle. That's the kind of flexibility we don't have on the roster right now. If Fautanu's gone, another guy in that same spot that I'm looking for that might be my fallback is Graham Barton from Duke. Played left tackle for them. Some project him as a center, but I think because he's a left side player, could slide over to left guard. He is a mauler in the run game. And a guy that has that versatility, he's good in pass protection. He would be my fallback. And so if you think if you're sitting there at home watching this and you think Fautanu is not going to be there, that's dumb. Okay, put Graham Barton there. Now let's skip to our next pick, which now we have a second rounder. See, shows your picks here right in the middle along with your needs. So now it's a lot more balanced draft. We have a second, we have a third, we have two fourths, two sixths, and a seventh. Okay. Now this is really interesting. Okay. So I have a couple of goals coming into this draft. One was to take care of that interior line position, preferably left guard. We've done that. Another one is I want to come away with at least one, maybe two linebackers on 4-year rookie deals. Because as much as I like Terrell Dotson, and I think Jerome Baker is an solid player. 1-year deals, 1-year deals for veterans. If Dodson blows up and he's a perfect fit for the scheme, of course they're going to try to extend that guy. But I want, this is 2 years in a row now with guys on expiring contracts. So let's get some youth in there at linebacker. Peyton Wilson's really intriguing. Now, he's an older player and he has some serious medical issues in his past, but he's athletic as heck. If you look at his spider chart, that combination of height, and then 40 and his 10-yard split, vertical jump, broad jump. That's pretty outstanding stuff. But I also am looking for some length on the defensive line. Bigger, longer players, similar to that Jadeveon Clowney role that McDonald got so much out of him with the Ravens. And so let me scroll down here and just see if any of those guys pop up. There's Junior Colson, who I know a lot of you guys want to take at linebacker there too. And that would make some sense. But I think linebacker, there's value later on in this class, especially at Mike. So here's a guy that I really, really like that would fit that mold that I'm talking about on the defensive line. Ruka Rororo from Clemson. 6'4", 290. 25 tackles, 5 sacks, 1 pass defense. Still a raw guy. Didn't start playing football until his junior year in high school. But look how balanced this is for a guy that big. Go look at his combine workout. I mean, this guy really, really moves. And you watch his tape, and it's there. Still a little bit raw. Still has some technique to refine. But there's some exciting tape. So do I do that here? Or do I take Tyler Newbin, who some people think is the best player at that position in the draft? 6'2", 210, a bigger safety that you can kind of groom behind Jenkins, and you hedge yourself against Love, whose contract is up at the end of this year. And this might be kind of more of that hybrid safety that McDonald enjoyed so much using Kyle Hamilton in that role. Let me do this. Let me look at defensive line and see if there's some other guys that fit kind of that role that I'm thinking about that I could take later on. Man, I don't know. But safety there is. So I'm going to take Aurora because now I've checked maybe my two biggest boxes coming into this draft. Bigger, longer defensive lineman and that left guard. Now skip to my next pick. We're going to go to the third round. Now I'm getting to a point where it's like, I want to see what's there at linebacker, because if there's a guy that I think could be a long-term starter, this would be the place to take him. So let's take a look at the linebacker class. Jeremiah Trotter, he's got the name. man, I don't see any splash plays on tape. And he's really not as great of an athlete as you would hope, as you can see by his spider chart. But then again, Tommy Eichenberg's a guy that's athletically limited. Trevin Wallace is a guy, 6'2", 241, had a great Senior Bowl. Seahawks met with him at the Combine. He's ranked here as their 141st player. But I just don't feel like, I feel like I want to wait on that. Let's see what the safety class looks like. And there's a guy that I absolutely love. Cole Bishop, Utah, 6'2", 207. Look at the athletic profile. Experienced guy, plays in the box, can cover. That's my long-term safety. I'm taking Cole Bishop right there. Now I'm going to skip to my pick again, and I'm really hoping that one of those linebackers I like is still on the board. Now there's Trevin Wallace, but I want to go down a little bit because this is where I disagree with this particular mock and there. And you can customize. I could build my own rankings if I want to, but I'm not going to rank 250 players. I don't have time for that. They have Maris Leafau from Notre Dame ranked as their 204th best player. I disagree. This is my favorite linebacker that I've watched on tape so far, even more so than Junior Colson. 6'2", 235. Look at the athletic profile. And when you watch this guy, he plays with his hair on fire. He plays, it reminds you kind of Hufanga from the 49ers. Plays, he's always moving forward. He doesn't shy away. He takes on blocks. He's physical. He's looking to hit guys, and he has some coverage ability. He overruns plays sometimes. But that's coaching. This is a guy I disagree with their ranking, and this is a guy I think could be a long-term contributor at linebacker for the Seahawks, and that's why I'm taking him there. Now we go to our second fourth-round pick, and now I'm just going to look at what the all overall rankings, because now you get into where, you know, I want to look at best player available and make sure I'm not missing anything. Okay, because I've checked, in my opinion, all my biggest boxes, biggest needs. Left guard, defensive line, strong safety, linebacker. Is there an edge guy there that maybe slipped? Not really. I think they saw that from this class. I think that's why they re-signed Daryl Taylor, but also it plays into what I was talking about earlier, that another team might be looking at this and offer us a pick for Daryl Taylor. There's some guys later on that I like, though. You can get some value there. So I want to look at all, because this is where the Seahawks could very well make a pick that freaks out the fans because they don't understand it, because they don't think it's a need. I could see them taking a wide receiver here, and this is a guy that I absolutely love. I am such a Luke McCaffrey fan. I think he's a guy that can play inside or outside. I think JSN can play outside. I think people have pigeonholed him as slot only. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think receiver is always a need. I have had so many people when I post mock drafts where I take a receiver tell me it's not a need. Really? Because DK Metcalf is our biggest cap hit next year. Well, second biggest cap hit. Going into the last year of his deal, receivers are just getting more and more expensive. Tyler Lockett's old now and expensive, entering into the last year of his deal next year as well. So you have JSN, and then Jake Bobo is an undrafted free agent, and then what? They brought Dwayne Eskridge back because they still think he might have a role. Receivers are so expensive now. And these guys come out of college now so much more prepared to play in the pro game because the pro game has borrowed and stolen so many ideas from spread concepts in college. Man, I like Luke McCaffrey and I'm taking him here. I'm sorry, guys. If you disagree with it, I'm sorry. He's going to be a fun, fun player. And my philosophy on the draft, and I think, gosh, if this isn't your philosophy as a GM in the NFL, you're going to get yourself fired. You cannot just draft for today. You also can't just draft potential and upside. It's got to be a balance. You have to do both. Well, so far, I got a starting left guard. I got a guy who might be in the defensive line rotation. Sometimes these guys take longer to develop up front, but I love the upside. It's got Pro Bowl upside. Cole Bishop, a great versatile safety that I love. Leafau, a guy who projects to be a long-term starting linebacker for me, and now really, really fun, versatile receiver in McCaffrey. Plus, it would just piss off the 49ers to have to face a McCaffrey, wouldn't it? Now, as far as needs go, like, I'm not hunting needs. Now, I'm just kind of looking at the overall. Let's do this, though, because I do think one thing that's missing, and he's still there. Okay. Seahawks really lack a true nose tackle. It's something that McDonald had in Baltimore. I can't remember the name of the two players on the depth chart there right now, but they were dirty work lunch pail guys. They weren't guys that were going to get a lot of sacks. They were just going to do their job, occupy blocks, set things up for the other guys. And there aren't that many of those in this draft. A lot of you love Tavondre Sweat. He just fell in between our two picks here. Didn't really make sense there. It would have been a choice between him or Arororo. Which, by the way, if his nickname isn't Scooby-Doo, then it should be. McKinley Jackson, who, ironically enough, was a teammate last year of Cameron Young at Texas A&M. Cameron Young's probably the closest thing to a true nose tackle on the roster today. 6'2", 325. He's that guy. Big, strong. I really want a zero one technique. So let's take McKinley Jackson. If it will let me. Why won't it? What's going on here? Oh, I got to skip to my pick first. I didn't do that yet. Oh. Did I just spend all that time talking about McKinley Jackson and then he's not going to be on the board because I hadn't skipped to my pick yet? God love, you know, they always say you got to love live TV. Well, I guess live podcasting does the same thing. All right, so we miss out on that. Well, let's do this then, because I still think it's a need, and there are two players who sort of fit that profile. They're a little longer, though, on the interior. Fabian Lovett of Florida State, who I thought I really stood out at the combine, wasn't familiar with him, went back and watched some stuff after that. Jordan Jefferson from LSU is the other guy. Just really, really big. And look at that athletic profile. Look at his three cone, 98th percentile at 6'4", 317 pounds. Gosh, I don't know. Let's look at the overall, first of all, because I don't know if I want to commit to that. All right. How do you feel about the tight end room? You got Noah Fant. You have Pharaoh Brown, who's more of the blocking tight end. You have Brady Russell. Do you want another tight end? Dallin Hulker is more of a kind of an H-back type. Jared Wiley's long, 6'7", 260. I like Jared Wiley. Let's take a tight end. Let's skip to my next pick. So we have left is 6'16 and 7'15. And one of these picks, I want to come away with an interesting edge player. And right here, I'm going to be a little bit of a homer, but I think Brennan Jackson is rated too low. 6'4", 264. Really productive player. Really fast for his size. Just a high motor player, a longer edge guy. I think you need to add that. Braden McGregor is the other guy that I look at in this range. Played at Michigan. Mike McDonald knows him. Reminds me of the first time I saw Max Crosby on tape. Long arms, just super high motor. But I think Brennan Jackson's a little bit bigger. Now we're going to skip to our very last pick. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because here's what I want to do here. Well, there's two things. I've usually when I do mock drafts, if there's a second linebacker there that I like, I would take him. But I think most of those guys are gone and you can get them in undrafted free agency. And I think you can make an argument that when it comes to recruiting undrafted free agents this year at the linebacker position, you can sell those guys on an opportunity. Development of quarterback, a guy on the practice squad, the guy that I want isn't here. I've been taking Devin Leary a lot in the seventh round. I think he's being vastly underrated. I think he's one of the most pro-ready guys of the day three guys. Keaton Slovis, I'm not sold on. Is there another offensive lineman? Here's a guy. Dominique Hampton. I mentioned him earlier. He's being rated too low. Former UW safety. Look at this. 96th percentile in height. 98th percentile in weight. 6'3", 220, 95th percentile in wingspan, 94th percentile in arm length, 95th percentile in hand size, but 82nd percentile in vertical jump. A guy that can play, again, I think Cole Bishop, even though he's listed as a strong safety here, has the skills to play free. Hampton could be that big nickel guy that you could really almost play some weak side linebacker sort of hybrid role stuff with. I mentioned earlier that maybe, you know, Bishop could play in that role. Kyle Hamilton did. I think Dominique Hampton even more so. So I'm going to take him. So let's view the results. Let's wrap this thing up. This is what I ended up with. Let me take myself out of here so you can see it up a little bit closer. Troy Fautanu in the first round after trading down. We pick up a second round pick. We get Ruka Rororo, Cole Bishop, the strong safety out of Utah. I think he can play free as well. Maris Liefau, linebacker, Notre Dame. Luke McCaffrey, wide receiver, Rice. Jared Wiley, tight end, TCU. Brennan Jackson, edge, Washington State. Dominique Hampton, corner, Washington. Yeah. What do you think of that? Let me see if there's let me get rid of this here first. Stop sharing that. Let's see what our comments are here. Scooby-Doo. We got a lot of reaction on Scooby-Doo. Jared G likes the pick of Brennan Jackson. Fautanu or bust from Misfit 74. Patrick, great stuff, Dan. Thank you. Very nice. Thoughts about Tremaine Antrim. Yep. Go back to the beginning. This will live on the page afterwards if you missed anything today. Haley says Malik Mustafa and Newbin are my favorite safeties. I like both of them too. I really love Newbin. I just think the opportunity cost of taking him where I would have had to take him, that the drop off on some of those guys I like on the defensive line after that would have been a little tough. And I really want to get one of those guys. Now, one thing that I've done a few times in some of these mock drafts too, is if I miss out on the offensive, if I trade down and miss out on the offensive players I want, because again, I don't think Fautanu is going to be there. Maybe Graham Barton is, but let's say he's gone too. Then I'll go Darius Robinson, big edge out of Missouri, sort of a similar profile to Rororo. I feel like I've gotten really good at saying that name, by the way, so I'm proud of that. But maybe a guy like Darius Robinson there, if they really value that skill set, that position, and then that might leave you in the second round to take a Tyler Newbin. I've done this exact same draft a couple of times. And then the third round, you can still sometimes get Cooper Beebe, who's a plug and play day one guard at left guard in the third round, or a Mason McCormick from South Dakota State, small school guy, but a guy that also projects at left guard. So, you can kind of play around with it that way. But I just think that position is something that's really, really vital to this team. I think based on current personnel that, we might see McDonald play more even fronts, might look more like a 4-3 at times than a 3-4 with what he does on the field with Leonard Williams and Tremont Jones, Jaron Reed kind of rotating inside. You have Mike Morris on the outside. So you might be looking for another bigger edge guy. And that's where, a guy like Rororo fits that profile, or certainly Darius Robinson would. So let me see. Any last minute questions? These lives are fun. It's great getting instant feedback and interaction. I wish, though, the only thing I wish, if anyone from YouTube's watching, and I doubt they are, shout out for Zach Zinter there from Angry Bucket too. Yeah, sounds like the leg's going to be great. Just posted a quote today on Twitter from him at the combine that he thinks he's going to be full, ready to go at the beginning of camp. Zach Zinter is a plug and play first day starting guard as well. It could be there in the third or fourth round if any teams especially are concerned about the leg still. And obviously Mike McDonald would know him well, as would Jay Harbaugh, special teams coach. By the way, I got to meet Coach Fitz, assistant special teams coach, and Josh Bynes the other day, along with Nico Thorpe, who's officially part of the staff too. Those guys are really excited about some of the things that are happening. And I look forward to talking to those guys a little bit more. Jer G puts in a vote for Holker. Interesting player. He played in the Shrine game and might've been one of the best players in that game. And he's a little bit different than, Fant or Brown, and not too dissimilar to Jaheim Bell from Florida State, who the Seahawks met with at the combine. So maybe that's a kind of a skill set, sort of a fullback H-back type that they're looking to take advantage of. But what I was going to say, the thing I don't like is if I just stream live through StreamYard and just put it out on all the different platforms, I can take your comments and actually put them on the screen. But there's a feature that I can't activate in YouTube unless I do it, and it deactivates that feature, if that makes sense. And so I choose to do it this way. So, but I like doing these too, and I'll try to do them more often. Just to just to look way ahead into the future. You know, when the draft comes around a month from now, I will be live streaming the first round. I don't think I'll do night two. I think I'll just be, you know, tweeting that, especially because I only have one pick, but I'll be live streaming during the draft and just, you know, reacting live to it along with you and kind of working through all the scenarios. So that'll be fun. Had a lot of fun doing that last year, although I got in some trouble last year because I actually shared the screen and got a 90-day ban last year from YouTube. That was a little bit scary as it came at a time when I was really just trying to establish this version of the podcast and trying to grow the channel. So yeah, let's call this one a night, shall we? We got to do outro music here, right? Always got to have a little bit of the music going on. Follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Check out the show I did earlier today with Sanjit T, who just accepted it. So in addition to the Football Scout YouTube page, which is fantastic, he is now actually working for a small college in Wisconsin as a scout now. So that's taking up a bunch of his time. But now I can actually introduce him as a college scout. And his specialty, his wheelhouse is offensive line. So we focus on that and give some cool thoughts on some of the guys that might be able to compete for jobs. Of course, they signed the new guard today immediately as we were finishing up. So we didn't get to react to that. But he did talk about McClendon Curtis and some of the things he's seen from him and what he likes about Anthony Bradford and Oluwatimi and George Fant and all those kinds of things. So check that out as well. And then tomorrow, what day is this? Monday? Tomorrow, Jackson Bevins from Cigar Thoughts. Always great to have him on the show and get his thoughts. And we'll just kind of do a little bit of an update on where he feels like the Seahawks are in the offseason. And moving forward from there, I've got some really, really cool guests coming up. So just subscribe in all the different places so that you don't miss any of that. I really appreciate all of you guys for being a part of this. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. I'm Dan, forever and always. Go Hawks. See you next time.